This is going out to the whole wide west side. Know what I'm saying? Yeah. Break it down for me. Steady mopping, rock, rock on. I was just a young boy living in the hub city. Eastside Compton. Back in the days when Ice Cube and Easy had every talking about boy you can't.
This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 on the west side at UBC.
Too short, bumped in every super's boat and told us all how to ride for the west coast. Put my music in everywhere you at, throw your gloves in the air and wave them like you just don't care. From LA to the Bay, what you say? All day, every day, any damn day. Take a look around, we got the whole world locked down. But we know, we know, we don't stop, we won't stop. That's why I put it down for the west side.
Didn't seem that long ago.
Oh no.
We were still in 40s at the liquor store.
Oh no.
Mama started tripping, so it's time.
Welcome, this is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9. Today's a special day. It's an anniversary. Not a nice anniversary. There's been a lot of anniversaries lately. 100 years of BBC. And Hello Kitty turned 30 a little while ago. And the space. And in space, the Hubble Telescope in operation for 25 solid years of some of the most amazing science ever produced on this planet. So, what is the next anniversary? Well, today is the 30th anniversary of the Challenger space shuttle design. The space shuttle, as we all know, has been retired, but it seems to have taken it. We took it for granted those years that it would fly perfectly. Any problems. And then things had to go right, and if one thing went wrong, could explode in the air. Or the next Challenger, I forget what the name was, I think it was Discovery, when it was going to land, it broke apart in the atmosphere, and all the astronauts died. So a million things can go right, but if one thing goes wrong, they lose the space shuttle and many lives. So the shuttle, the shuttle Challenger, not Discovery. I think there was maybe five shuttles built, I'm not sure. And Challenger may have been the third. But the shuttle exploded just 73 seconds after launch from Kennedy Space Center on January 28, 1986, killing all crew members aboard. There was one teacher on board, Krista McCullough, and she inspired many of not only her students, but students around the world because of her bravery and her quest for knowledge. But the shuttle is it's a man-made machine, and a human error, I believe it was a ring, an O-ring on one of the tank fuselages or lines cracked, and fuel spilled out, and the fuel cut a hole into the big tank, and it exploded. So I think in that morning, one of the engineers, or some of the engineers, warned NASA that it was too cold to launch because there was a tolerance temperature level for the operation of the shuttle. So I believe that morning it was 41 degrees Fahrenheit in Cape Canaveral. That apparently was a temperature that was too low for the design of the shuttle. The head people in NASA were warned by the engineers. The engineers said, "We think it's too cold." And NASA disregarded the warnings and went ahead anyway. And when the shuttle was launched, the gas leaked out because of the faulty O-ring, and the leaking gas cut through the tank and it exploded. And we saw that there was a big explosion with the two engines flying off after the explosion and a big kind of like a crooked fork. So astronaut Scott Kelly of NASA had a statement for today's 30th anniversary. Scott Kelly says, in quote, "Today marks the 30th anniversary of the space shuttle Challenger accident, so I'd just like to take a moment of silence and recognize the sacrifice of all those crew members and how their legacy and lives in our achievement in space. This was not the only time astronauts died in space, and in the history of exploring space, there have been many times where astronauts have risked their lives. I think what I do recall is the first jump from, let's say, space. An astronaut jumped from space, and they were testing maybe the astronaut's spacesuit or other things if the astronaut could survive. What happened, the suit leaked, and the person's arm, right arm, I believe it was, swelled up to a level where it nearly exploded. It grew very big. So when we're heading into space, as we are going to do into Mars one day, there are many risks. Many tests are done, but still we do face disasters like the Challenger. Astronaut Buzz Aldrin said in commemoration, and quote, "I think in many ways the Challenger disaster challenged us to renew our exploration efforts. And families of the lost astronauts are gathering with NASA to mark the space shuttle accident's anniversary Thursday, which is today. Teachers and school board members are also gathering at the McAuliffe Shepherd Discovery Center in Concord, New Hampshire, to pay tribute to crew members and teacher Christy McCullough and the six other astronauts who died. Christy McCullough became a celebrity and a hero. She was featured on many interviews. I saw one today where she was speaking, 'Are you afraid of space?' And she says, 'We're too busy to be afraid. We're tested and we go through the drill so rigorously, we don't even have time to be afraid.'" And in her interview, after the tribute to Christy McCullough, Buzz Aldrin said, "We must continue to carry on the legacy of McCullough, who taught at Concord High School, and the Challenger crew by encouraging more young people to enter in the sciences and working to achieve the dreams that led McCullough into space." So I'm now making a website of my astronomy shows, but I'm going to have other topics. One of the topics is going to be women in science, so I'm going to feature Christy McCullough. I'm also going to feature one of the ladies we're going to talk about today. And after the break, I'm going to talk about the discovery of Cepheid variable stars as distance markers for outer galaxies. So how do we know for sure that a galaxy is 1 billion light years away or 1 million? How do we know? What things have scientists done to assure, to make it certain that, because Edwin Hubble, he estimated the Andromeda galaxy to be 1 million light years away, and it was 2 million. So he was wrong by a factor of 2. So what is it that scientists have come up with to assure us that when we measure something, it really is that far away? So let's see some more things on the Challenger. One thing about the space shuttle, it flew with clockwork. It came up, or it went up, it came down. People took it for granted that it was always going to be perfect. There were so many things that had to be taken into account, and most times the shuttle flew perfectly. As we know, one of the missions to the moon failed. I think it was Apollo 13. "Houston, we have a problem." And that was one of NASA's greatest hours, to rescue that spaceship, as it was to fix Hubble. But things do go wrong. There's a new documentary that will be airing. I will tell you, I don't know the exact date, but it says here a new documentary about the Space Shuttle and Challenger. And it doesn't say what day or time it is. So the documentary is called Challenger Disaster, The Lost Tapes. It re-examines the disaster using contemporary audio recordings and rare video footage, including interviews with McCullough and clips of the New Hampshire social studies teacher practicing some of the lessons she had planned to send down to kids on Earth from orbit. So this was 30 years ago. Many of you listening were not alive then. So maybe this this thing doesn't resonate with you as much as it does to the people who were watching TV, were watching Krista McAuliffe every day, and watching Krista McAuliffe, her smile, her bravery. And then when we sat there and watched the Challenger explode with shots of her parents, and this really resonates. So the Challenger disaster lost tapes will be on National Geographic Channel. It may have already aired because today is the anniversary, so look for it tonight. It's going to air in 171 countries and 45 languages. And McCullough is featured a lot in this one. She was a payload specialist on the doomed Challenger mission. It was known as STS-5511. The other astronauts who lost their lives that day were Mission Commander Dick Scobie, Pilot Mike Smith, Mission Specialist Judy Resnick, Ellison Onizuka, and Ron McNair, and also Payload Specialist Greg Jarvis. Investigators later determined that a rubber seal called O-ring in one of the shuttle's solid rocket boosters failed during launch. So what does that mean, failed during launch? Well, here it says it failed partly as a result of unusually cold weather, and this caused the O-ring to harden. So the O-ring, it allowed gas to leak out. This failure allowed hot, high-pressure gas to escape and damage Challenger's huge external fuel tank, as well as the equipment that attached the solid rocket booster to the tank. The space shuttle fleet was grounded for 32 months after that in the wake of the Challenger disaster. So that's about almost 3 years. Finally taken to the skies again in September 1988 on Discovery's STS-26 mission. Another disaster happened February 1st, 2003, when the shuttle Columbia broke apart during re-entry into Earth's atmosphere. I saw that the other day. The people in NASA were aware that they'd lose contact with the shuttle for a few minutes. So there's a minute or two of dead air where nothing is heard. And then it shows the people in NASA saying, shuttle, come in, shuttle, come in. But they didn't. All it showed, camera shows, was the shuttle Columbia broke apart upon re-entering Earth's atmosphere, killing all seven astronauts aboard. So what it shows is chunks of the shuttle streaking through the air, and everybody knew no one survived. The shuttle stopped flying for good in July 2011, and the surviving orbiters are now museum pieces. NASA currently relies on Russian Soyuz spacecraft to get its astronauts to and from orbit, though the space agency is encouraging privately developed American spaceships to perform this taxi service. So, indeed, NASA awarded a total of $6.8 billion to Boeing and SpaceX in September 2014 to finish work on their crew capsules. I was thinking about this, these space shuttles, and we have really no idea of the complexity of the task. The space shuttles had the computing power of possibly a small wristwatch, so they weren't technically advanced. Maybe for that time they were, but compared to our age, they weren't. But a reusable spacecraft was the reason behind the development of the space shuttles. But it became so costly to check the foam on the wings and the underbelly and to replace parts. It was just more costly than it was imagined. So they flew on so many wonderful missions, but they were costly instruments. So today we're remembering 30 years of the Challenger disaster, where many astronauts lost their lives, seven, I think. And if you look on the National Geographic Channel, it says Challenger disaster lost tapes. There will be a good show on overview of the Challenger disaster. Okay, last time I was talking about, so pay a tribute today. I'm paying a tribute, 5 seconds of silence to the Challenger disaster. There, that was 5 hours of dead air space, which we're not allowed to have. So anyway, that was just a tribute. and Christy McCullough will always be the face of that one. And she inspired a lot of people, and she was brave. And even if we talked to her in her place in heaven, she would tell us, go on, don't let this stop us. So hopefully we can keep exploring space. Humans don't figure in space except for the International Space Station, but there's many marvelous things that NASA's doing with its satellites. So last time I was talking about the Large Magellanic Cloud and the Small Magellanic Cloud, two irregular dwarf galaxies. So they're not spirals, and they are, I guess you can say, irregular shaped. They're two dwarf, that's why they're called irregulars. You can't classify them. They are two members of the local group of galaxies. I think there is about 35 galaxies in our local group, something like that, 35 to 50. And some of them are very small. The two biggest are the Andromeda and the Milky Way. So Andromeda has, we can see, other galaxies orbiting it. And this is what's happening in our Milky Way. The Small Magellanic Cloud and the Large Magellanic Cloud orbit the Milky Way. And they are being torn apart, shredded apart by the gravitational tides of our giant galaxy. There's also another galaxy that's a bit closer. I believe it's about 77,000 light years from the Milky Way, nicknamed Snickers, the bar, the chocolate bar. So it orbits, I believe, about 77,000 light years from our Milky Way. And the these small galaxies, they are very important. They are treasures of discovery. Because, for example, the Large Magellanic Cloud has so many huge stars. There's lots of star formation. There's a giant nebula. Some of the things we can see in the Large Magellanic Cloud dwarf anything in our own Milky Way galaxy. Even our own Milky Way galaxy is maybe 10 times more massive, 10 times more stars than the Large Magellanic Cloud. So the Large Magellanic Cloud and the Small Magellanic Cloud are treasure troves for astronomers, for discoveries, and a lot of it is to do with star formation. So now what I'm going to do, I'm going to pause for a break. After the break, we will talk more about the Small and the Large Magellanic Cloud. So just remembering, today is a day of remembrance for the space shuttle that exploded 30 years ago, where seven astronauts lost their lives. This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CIT.
For over 30 years, there has been one voice in the local Vancouver art scene that has stood above the rest, and that's Discorder, that conspiracy, punk rock, foxcore, sassy, still publishing magazine from CITR. We're one of the established and trusted voices of Vancouver's music and arts culture in the Lower Mainland, with 8,000 copies distributed monthly to over 135 distribution locations, from the Lido to Zulu Records.
Discorder is one of a few magazines published by a community radio station, and we only serve up the freshest local and Canadian goods.
We have interviews with artists, album reviews, live show reviews, and articles about everything important to our crazy, unique, varied, and amazing culture in Vancouver and across the country.
Pick up your free copy of Discorder today, or sign up to have it delivered to your door wherever you are.
Check out our website for distribution locations and all the information about advertising and getting involved.
Let's do some quick yes or no questions. Are the following things technically possible? Life on other planets, is that theoretically possible?
Yes.
Okay. What about a Schwarzschild wormhole?
Yes.
Okay, what about this? Me going on a date with Charlize Theron?
No.
But not at all? In no universe?
No.
In none of the infinite universes does that happen?
No.
It's completely beyond the bounds of scientific possibility, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Quick follow-up question. In any of those potential universes, am I the one rejecting her, and that's why it doesn't work out?
No. You to realize that typing your response is difficult for me, correct?
Okay, sure, yeah, it's just I'm trying to play this out because it just I'm just trying to see if there was any hypothetical hope.
No.
It doesn't matter. But never say never. Okay, if time travel were possible, would you want to go back in time and refuse to do this interview?
Yes.
You truly are an incredibly smart man.
Welcome back. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on 101.9. So, I have about 8 minutes left, so why not just keep on going with the Challenger? And then next week, I'll conclude with Large Magic Land Cloud. This Challenger disaster made me pause a bit and think what it was like in the 60s and the 70s. It was an extremely exciting time. Now we are told of new planets, maybe. The Planet Nine has been discovered. We see new things on other worlds. For example, there are spacecraft in Jupiter, Saturn, even one race by Pluto a few months ago. We're seeing amazing things. And Hubble continues to produce just the most amazing science. Lots of things are being discovered. It truly is a golden age of astronomy now. We are so fortunate for the astronomers like myself who are interested in this stuff, all just the breadth of discoveries or the depth of discoveries, it's amazing. But it was the excitement of those times. We don't have the excitement now that we did before of the first person walking on the moon, of the disaster, I think Apollo 13, of astronauts going into space, discovering things, of dreams of Mars. No, we're not going to go to Mars for maybe another 20, 30 years, so that's too bad. If somebody would asked in the 60s or the 70s, we'd say we'd be in Mars in 10 years. And it's taken that long to get to this point, and we're still very far away from Mars. But during that time, a lot of peoples were going into space. Monkeys were going into space. The Senator John Glenn, he was the first American in space. We discovered so many things. When we went into space, we discovered space was ionized. We have the radiation belts. We have the radiation belts are part of the magnetosphere that protects the Earth from damaging space radiation. So without it, we wouldn't have life on Earth, not on Mars, on Earth. So we're discovering so many new things about Mars. There's water on Mars. There's all these amazing things. But just the excitement of that time when we were young students in high school or in our first years of university, and we were glued to television sets when we saw humans in space, humans walking on the moon, the space shuttle. It was an exciting time. There's so much excitement now for astronauts, but it's not capturing the public's attention, I think. Like the when people are going into space. So imagine if people go to Mars or we go further out in the solar system in decades from now. Now that will truly be exciting. Okay, so let's talk about something, the failure. Why did this Challenger fail? Okay, so let's talk about the O-rings. So each of the space shuttles, two solid rocket boosters, were constructed of seven sections, six of which were permanently joined in pairs at the factory. So there was nothing that could have gone wrong in terms of O-rings there. For each flight, the four resulting segments were then assembled in the vehicle assembly building in Kennedy Space Center in Florida with three field joint. The factory joints were then sealed with asbestos silica insulation applied over the joint, and each field joint was sealed with two rubber O-rings. After the destruction of Challenger, the number of O-rings per field was increased to three, so they increased the number of O-rings. The seals of all the joints were required to contain hot, high-pressure gases, so these were all designed to tolerances where they thought all these hot gases, which are produced during launch, it could contain them, nothing would go wrong. So there's solid propellant inside that's burning, and this solid propellant is forced out of the nozzle at the back end of each rocket. During the space shuttle design, a McDonnell Douglas report in September 1971 discussed the safety record of the solid rockets. They said a safe abort was possible after most types of failures. but one was especially dangerous, and this was a burn through by hot gases of the rocket's casing. So this report stated that if the burn through occurs adjacent to the hydrogen oxygen liquid tank or orbiter, this there could be a problem, and an abort was not possible. So this report accurately foreshadowed the Challenger accident. They said this was the one problem that they could not abort. There was other things that they could abort, but if the joints failed, if the rocket O-rings failed, something in the sections, all these sections, if the sections that were permanently joined in pair with three field joint and sealed with two rubber O-rings, if these failed, an abort was not possible. So, engineers at Marshall Space Flight Center wrote to the manager of the Solid Rocket Booster Project on several occasions suggesting that this field joint design was unacceptable. One engineer suggested that the joint rotation would render the secondary O-ring useless, but the person in charge, I'm not going to say his name, but he was in charge, he did not forward these memos to the NASA officials, and the engineering for these O-rings was accepted by NASA. So these concerns were not forwarded to the people. So one person, the Solid Rocket Booster Project manager, was notified on several occasions that abort could not occur if the O-rings failed. And this person neglected to forward this. So evidence of serious O-ring erosion was present at as early as the second space shuttle mission, STS-2, which was flown by Columbia. So contrary to NASA regulations, the Marshall Space Center did not report this problem to senior management at NASA, but opted to keep the problem within the reporting channels. So they talked about it, but they didn't report it to the higher-ups. Even after the O-rings were redesignated as critically one, meaning that their failure result in the destruction of the orbiter, no one at the Space Center suggested that the shuttles be grounded until the flaw could be fixed. So there were warnings before that were not heeded. And during the investigation, Sally Ride, an astronaut, told Richard Feynman, a physicist, that the O-rings were not tested at temperatures below 50 degrees Fahrenheit or 10 degrees Celsius. So what happened on the morning of the Challenger, it was 41 degrees Celsius, too cold for that threshold level of safety at 50 degrees. But they were also warned that what would happen if something went wrong, this system could not abort. So there was warnings that were not heeded. There was delays on that morning when Challenger flew, but the launch date was moved and moved again. The launch date was rescheduled for January 25 when it took place. Okay, so thank you for listening. This is Marco. You've been listening to Astronaut, to AstroTalk, and you've been listening to how human error could have contributed to the Challenger disaster. Thank you for listening. Next week, I'm going to conclude with a large and small magic Leonard cloud. This is Marco. You've been listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.
The UBC English.